Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And joined by Bob Buhner today. We've been talking about Kathleen Kane and the press conference. Jeff Moulton, his investigation, and as Sarah reported in the news just a few moments ago, that there was no political reason as to why anything was slow, fast-tracked, or anything like that. In other words, there may have been missteps, but it had nothing to do with politics. Is that a fair summary?
It really is. And that was the allegation that Kathleen Kane made during the political campaign for attorney general, that and that she would investigate it. And true to her word in that respect, there was an investigation by, I think, an unbiased outside prosecutor, and what she kind of alleged or alluded to during the campaign turned out not to be true. Much, I think, to the relief of Pennsylvanians, who would not want to have an attorney general running for governor who would use cases like the Sandusky case to gain some kind of election advantage and timing things. Right. For the benefit of politics and not for the benefit of justice.
Right, right, exactly. So so that was the gist of it. You found a couple of parts, just to repeat one more time, a bit disturbing.
Yes, I thought the it was inexplicable, the delay by the state police in the initial stages of the investigation. The initial investigator, who was either from the Clinton County or Center County barracks of the state police, did, it appears, very little. Over a few months, he was replaced by numerous other state troopers, and there was no explanation why. The other thing that was bothersome was the issue that the state police were not made available by the commissioner of the state police to be interviewed to explain why there were these delays and what was going on. Just because there appear on paper to be delays doesn't mean the troopers were or were not investigating. It's just no one knows. And without being able to quiz them or query them, that remains kind of just a huge mystery. It doesn't reflect well on the state police. The other question was the timing of the search warrant on Jerry Sandusky's house. Turns out when there was one, they found some rather crucial evidence that helped result in leads identifying other victims. Should they have done it earlier and tipped off Sandusky with the fear of the prosecutorial team was that he would be tipped off and it may end up an investigation for naught, or do you wait and try and gather more evidence? Well, the bottom line on all this, Steve, is that Jerry Sandusky went to trial June of 2 years ago this month, was convicted on 45 of 48 counts, sentenced to 30 to 60 years in prison, truly a life sentence. He will never see the light of day. And that was the bottom line result on this. Now, they're questioning and quibbling, and with hindsight being 2020, the manner we got to where we are. But when it's all said and done, Jerry Sandusky is a convicted man. His reputation is deservedly ruined. And it was done by some of the best prosecutors in the state, and now we know without political interference or involvement.
Right. So that's the summary of what's happened today. Now, there's certainly some twists and turns in this.
Oh boy,
it's a 339 page report. So
I think
it's going to take a while to really pour through all of it, but they've tried to be as thorough as possible.
Yeah, I think the message, Steve, for the media and for us is stay tuned. I think the initial response from the prosecutorial team has been rather blunt and direct at some of the comments that were made. And as Mr. Moulton, the investigator, or the deputized attorney general that did this report, he made it clear early on, hey, 2020 is really hindsight. We know that, and it's easy to draw conclusions now and connect all the dots when you see the whole picture. And he was painfully aware that he could be accused of that kind of 2020 hindsight. So he was guarded in his words, but I think he gave as fair a report as one could ask, and it answered the critical questions. There are other questions unanswered.
Right.
All right. Now, another one of the great legal sports situations happens to be the Redskins trademark.
Oh, yeah.
This is not the first time that it's been taken off the boards. It's not the first time it's been appealed. But this time is a little bit different with social media and the pressure from it. But, you know, I don't know how much you know about patent law.
Oh, gosh. I took that course Friday afternoons at the Dickinson School of Law.
There you go.
And afterwards, we went out on Friday afternoon at 5:30 when the course was done. There was a keg of beer in the courtyard of the dormitory next to the law building, and we would sit around and discuss patent law over some thirst-quenching beverages. But I did take patents.
Fabulous.
Yes, I did take patent law and copyright law. And really what we're talking about here is a copyright. A copyright is a piece of intellectual property that has certain protections because of its unique nature or because it was created as a logo or a word like Coca-Cola. And, you know, these copyrighted words or logos or art drawings can lose their protection, that other people can't use them without permission. If, for example, they become part of the general parlance of the community, you know, the word Xerox comes to mind. You know, hey, Xerox that off for me. You know,
right.
Any copy machine, no matter who made it, was called a Xerox machine. And
right,
Xerox,
exactly. Just like any tissue is called a Kleenex.
Yeah, and so, and the most famous battle has always been with Coca-Cola and Pepsi. When you go into a place that has Pepsi products, you ask for a Coke, and all the staff is instructed to say, no, I'm sorry, we don't have that. We do have Pepsi. Because if you start – when people ask for Coke and you give them a Pepsi, then Coca-Cola may lose that copyright that they – you know, is worth billions of dollars to them. So copyrights are there. They are protected, but they are subject to being lost for certain things. And apparently – one of the areas, Steve, that you can lose it is if it is, I think the word that's been bandied about is disparaging. I think it has to be a little higher standard than that. You know, for example, I don't think you could copyright the swastika. That would not go over well, obviously, for all the reasons that anybody remembers.
Right.
But so there are things that can't be copyrighted. And apparently some Native Americans filed a protest with the Patent and Copyright Office, and they have an administrative tribunal within that office, and they decided this tribunal, it's not like a court of law that we would think of, has said, nope, you don't get it. You lost it. So you can still have it. It's still yours. You just don't get the protections of the law, which means I could start printing off T-shirts with Redskins.
You could silk screen all night if you want.
Exactly. And if I normally did that, the Redskins could literally throw me in jail for using their copyright and making profit out of it. And you can get, for example, if you infringe on a copyright, you get triple damages. So if the Redskins, if somebody was in their backyard printing up Redskins T-shirts and assumed that the patent was okay, well, and they sold all the T-shirts and made a profit, well, the damages that they would owe the Redskins or the owner of the copyright would be triple the profits. So there's a lot of protection there, and this is truly a billion-dollar decision. Bottom line is that there's precedent for this, as you alluded to, Steve. And the precedent is they went through this about 10 years ago, and in the court, they won. So when they actually got a hearing on it.
But this is what I find interesting. Okay, in 1999, this was brought up, if I recall the story. Right? And the reason that in 2003 that it went by the boards was that they said that they should have filed this in 1967 when the trademark started.
Yeah.
And that because of years gone by and age, it was denied. So then a younger group in 2006 brought this up, and 8 years later they finally ruled on it?
It's crazy. I was just thinking...
Why 8 years?
The wheels of justice apparently in the Patent and Copyright Office grind incredibly slow, as if to be non-existent. It's just awful. That is just terrible. I think they took their lead from the...
Right, it took them 4 years to appeal and won.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the new thing comes up in 2006, and it takes 8 years to rule it. How long is it going to take to appeal this one?
The good news is both you and I will be long retired before there's a resolution of this. And it is just absurd, frankly, because we're only at the first step of the appeal in the Patent and Copyright Court, which is a real trial court in essence, without a jury. And then it goes into the federal court system, you know, and it could go all the way to the Supreme Court. I was just thinking about this during the break. The danger of this is as follows. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, they obviously don't like people who eat meat. What is preventing them from going after the Green Bay Packers, saying that's Packers, meat Packers? It's disparaging. We find it appalling, an abomination. They're glorifying meat by having a nickname of the Packers. Where does it stop with the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves, the Kansas City Chiefs? Certainly you could find
the
Shikellamy Braves. What is Kevin going to do at football season? Touchdown, and then he has to pause and not say Shikellamy or not say Braves. Right. It's absurd. But anybody who could be a perceived victim will now have an opportunity to go back and challenge virtue. So no copyright is safe under that standard, because you're always going to find somebody upset about something. I was trying to think what they could do. Thank goodness it's the Danville Ironmen. We're not. That's kind of a hard one to be against. But somebody could find some grievance that the logo mischaracterizes the working man, etc. Who knows? But that's the kind of thing I think is a dangerous precedent to set, because it's disparaging. I think the one thing is that the President of the United States, when he opined on this local topic, which is obviously huge in Washington, D.C., but when he opined on it, it seemed to me that gave the green light to some people over in the patent office to, let's go. When the president says
Are the three-member panel, it was a 2-1 vote, by the way, are they political appointees?
I do not know that. I was wondering, what political connections would you have to be on there? But then when you really think about it, these are billion-dollar decisions that are being made. I mean, that's the true magnitude of these things. I don't know the answer to that, but my sense is, like anything else, it's an appointed position. Somewhere along the line, somebody with political connections wants somebody that's favorable to their side on that tribunal. How they get there is a good question.
Right. The reason I ask that is because when you look at the National Labor Relations Board, right, the National Labor Relations Board are political appointees.
Absolutely. And, we're waiting for a big case from the Supreme Court this week on that very issue.
Right. And Northwestern, of course, ended up appealing to the National Labor Relations Board. That's why they haven't released the vote yet. Now, my understanding is the vote by the Northwestern players is in the neighborhood of 60-15 against.
Wow.
Okay, that's my understanding through sources, that in that general neighborhood, it's 60-15 against unionizing.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't release the vote until the National Labor Relations Board rules on the appeal by Northwestern. And it's just, my gut tells me, just based on political appointees, they're going to uphold the original ruling.
Well, let me tell you what happened and what we're waiting for from the Supreme Court, because it has a bearing. There are things called recess appointments that gives the president of the United States the power to make appointments that he's allowed to make by law while the Congress is in actual recess, so that he can get people into positions And if Congress wants to go on a five-month recess, you can't paralyze the government. It's paralyzed enough. But you can't paralyze it so that he can't make his appointments through the confirmation process.
Right.
Well, what happened with the National Labor Relations Board, because it's such a critical body and it's filled with political appointees, President Obama made what he called recess appointments to the board. The trouble was the Senate was not technically in recess. They had pro forma sessions at the time that the president made these recess appointments. These appointments have been challenged, and the Supreme Court is ending its term in the next 7 days. We should well know before July 1st whether the Supreme Court agrees with the people challenging it. These were not recess appointments. These, in fact, were illegal appointments, and those individuals, their appointments are null and void, and the actions they took would probably be null and void as well. We're waiting for that as we speak, and that'll have a huge bearing on things.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Bob Buhner with us today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Now, the next big topic to come up is the O'Bannon trial, which is being decided by a judge. And that was the decision that the O'Bannon people made. They didn't want a jury trial. They wanted a judge. I'm watching this, Bob, and I'm watching the NCAA side.
Yeah, they're on now.
Just literally blow it in testimony. Just blow it.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a heart of the matter here, all right, which for whatever reason they're not attacking. And here's the attack that they say when it comes to, you know, look, they overstepped when it came to likenesses, okay? I got it.
Yeah.
But in terms of changing the whole model of sports and paying the student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
A salary, okay? You have to look at the judge and say, look, I want you to know, where does you're hearing about all this money, all this money, all this money. Let me tell you where the money goes, okay?
Yeah.
Title IX is an unfunded government mandate. We need to come up with money to fund it. This is how we do it. Do I win the case?
I think you may. I think that is one of two compelling arguments that the NCAA should have made, and apparently if they have, no one's noticed it. The other one is the incredible recruiting advantage that some schools could have where it becomes a bidding war for how much you can give these high school kids to come to your particular institution because you could have some rich donor start buying autographed T-shirts at $10,000 a pop from some high school kid, and it'll make things incredibly unfair in terms of a recruiting advantage. They're missing the point. They don't get that.
Well, the other part, but there's so much to this. There's a lot that does work to the student athlete's advantage, mm-hmm. a lot, and one of them is your scholarship, and your housing, and your food, and your books are all untaxed.
Yes.
Okay? You're not taxed. I mean, look, and student athletes aren't asking for this. And there's a small percentage that's like, how come I'm not getting my money? Where's my money? Look at all the people that are brought in. But that's not how the model works, okay? The model works in such a way so that you can have – I mean, my first question – to those who say, And you know talk shows deal too much in generality and not enough in specifics,
right.
Okay? And how many do you hear right now jumping on the bandwagon saying, oh, you got to pay the players. Look at all the money from TV. Look at all the people in the seats, blah, blah. Okay, that's a nice argument, okay? That sounds great. Now you've done a beautiful job of doing what a talk show does, and that's playing to the mob.
Yep.
Congratulations, you're a talk show host.
Exactly.
Okay, now let's do the other part. Now let's do the difficult part. Now tell me, since there's not enough money to really go around, which sports you'll drop. And I want you as the talk show host to go into the teams and tell them that they're no longer playing anymore because you had a bright idea.
Right. You know, Steve, you're reinforcing the comment I made to you the first time I ever met you, which is you are one incredible lawyer. You just didn't go to law school, but you're an incredibly astute analysis of legal matters is just something to listen to. And I told you that the first time I met you. You're exactly right.
Well, we got a lot more to talk about this topic coming up as well, because we're running the gambit today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Privilege for me to be joined by my good friend Bob Buhner.
Hey, Steve.
Who's with me today. We've run the gambit today, talking about the Kathleen Kane, Jeff Moulton press conference earlier today. We spent 45 minutes on that.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a half hour on the Redskins. Now we're going to talk about the case of Ed O'Bannon against the NCAA, where it's obvious that the NCAA, at least to me, overplayed its hand with EA Sports because of likenesses. I don't play the game, but I saw the commercials, and in the commercials, it left little doubt in my mind who was being portrayed.
Yeah, you know, for our listeners, what apparently happened is the NCAA licensed the likenesses of various undergrads who had participated in NCAA sports to a private company that makes video games involving sports and then sells those video games to Kevin Herr, who I think has, at last count,
yes,
2.5 million copies of various video games. But people like Kevin, who play these games, and they did it for a profit. And as you said, it was pretty apparent who some of the college players who were depicted in these video games were, and it was done without the consent of the individual athletes. But the NCAA apparently had gained some monetary benefit from this. And so EA Sports, the private gaming company, sold or settled with a class of athletes who were represented in this lawsuit. But there's other aspects of it, and that is what's going on in trial. And the lead plaintiff is a guy named Ed O'Bannon, who was a great basketball player at UCLA. I think, did he not come right after the John Wooden era was over at UCLA, Steve?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he played for Jim Herrick, because when Penn State beat UCLA in the 1991 NCAA tournament, Jim Herrick was the coach. Ed O'Bannon was a true freshman sitting out because of a knee injury. And then in 95, with Tyus Edney, they won the national championship.
And Ed O'Bannon is a pretty held in high regard at UCLA because, of course, the national championship. He played a little bit of professional ball for a few years and then settled in Las Vegas, where he ran into a fellow who has a lot of axes to grind with the NCAA, who has been bankrolling this lawsuit. And
Sonny Vaccaro.
Yeah, who's a handicapper of various sporting events, I think is an accurate depiction. Mm-hmm. And Sonny Vaccaro convinced Ed O'Bannon, who convinced some other people, and the next thing you know, you've got a class action lawsuit. And this part of Steve, as I understand it, is not for the money. I think there's no money damages. It's more of a there's other aspects involved, obviously, and
there's other aspects involved, but I think the future of intercollegiate athletics, even though you and I both know that regardless of the outcome, it will be appealed.
Yes.
Right. The judge appears to be very much intrigued by the money aspect of it. And I think, and here's the other part. It's also, I don't want to make any assumptions, but it's a woman. Well, look, we know that Title IX is an unfunded government mandate. But I think also, too, that most people, when they look at sports today, I think it's safe to say most people are in favor of women's sports done through Title IX.
I think that's it's come to prove it had merit. There was a lot of skepticism,
right.
And when people started,
right.
Universities started dropping wrestling and men's sports program because of Title IX, there was some pushback. But I think on balance, let's just say that Penn State women's volleyball team that keeps winning national championships is one of the great prides of Penn State, and they wouldn't go back on that in a heartbeat. But it came about because of Title IX.
Right, which, of course, that's just part of the component, mm-hmm. because obviously there are men's sports outside of basketball and football that also are in the same boat as Title IX
sure.
sports that do not make money. Not one of them makes money. Again, one of the great fallacies that Penn State fans have right now is that, oh, wrestling sells out, they make money.
Nah.
No, they don't.
Nope.
Okay? It's a seven. They lose maybe a little bit more than seven figures a year.
Yeah.
Okay? But that's okay. Okay? That's what people understand, that when you say this, it's not to be disparaging. It is to point out the difference that television radio makes in order for a sport to turn a profit. You're saying, why does Penn State men's basketball turn a $5.5 billion profit, and wrestling that sells out all the time loses a million?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Penn State men's basketball has a television contract to carry all of their games on the Big Ten Network and various other networks like ESPN, CBS, and so forth. They have a national radio contract. They have a Sirius XM radio contract as well through the Big Ten, and they have revenue sharing in the Big Ten. $65,000 for every sold-out game of the Big Ten. $27,000 is a low top-out. Take all the money, combine it from each game, you put it into a pool, and everybody gets 1/12. In football, it's a million top-out number down to 650,000, okay, to go with the TV contracts, the radio contracts, the Nittany Lion Club memberships, the parking, and the endowments, the corporate partners. The corporate partners are buying football and men's basketball. I mean, that's what they're buying in
mm-hmm.
reality, right? And what they do is they take it in the business model and they spread the wealth to everybody as much as possible based on how the model works. That's how the model works, to have 800 student athletes. If you want to pay, and the margin of error now as to how much money you have is about to drop on August 1st, because when they go to the full meal plan for everybody, including walk-ons, where they can go in anytime they want and get food anytime they want, which is the new rule, which, by the way, is the right move and a smart move and a proper move, because that is part of your training. It also is going to cost you a ton of money. And all of you know who go to the grocery store right now, when you go over to Wise Markets and you decide to buy food, how much more does it cost now than it cost a year ago? And you're doing this for 800, actually more than that. You're doing that for 1,200 student-athletes, because you have to include the walk-ons. 1,200 student-athletes who, by the way, do not eat lightly.
And, you know, I'm thinking about walking on. I just got to figure the sport for that meal plan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Steve,
So the money is going across the board for so many other things.
Yes.
And people don't realize, I mean, the cost of a scholarship and housing and things like that. You know, I mean, you take, for example, the scholarship for Mike Hull on the football team is different than the scholarship for Christian Hackenberg. You're like, no, it's not. Yes, it is, because Christian Hackenberg is out of state. His costs more. Mike Hull's done under the state rate. See, the rates for student athletes are exactly the same as they are for the student on campus. If you're out of state, you pay more.
Yep.
If you're in state, you pay less. If your parents happen to be, and you're a student athlete, and the parents happen to be at Penn State, have to be Penn State employees, you pay a quarter. I mean, so that's how it works. And you're shelling out a lot of money, and it's all tax-free to each one of the players. I mean, so it's not like there's not money involved. It's just bloodless. It's done by a computer.
Steve, you know, one of the things when you pull back and look at the lawsuit against the NCAA, what the NCAA is doing is arguing that their model of athletic competition is based on amateurism, that we do not right. pay the participants to play. Think about this. There was a man by the name of Avery Brundage.
Yes.
Who was the head, was an American, who was, I think, at one point an Olympian himself, but he ended up being the head of the International Olympic Committee for many, many, many years.
Right.
And he fought with all his strength and with the strength of many people who were like-minded to keep the Olympic movement a purely amateur movement. It was only in, I think it was 1992, was it? Or 96, when professional athletes were finally allowed to participate. And, of course, the sport that comes to mind right away is Olympic basketball, when the Dream right. Team was compiled with Michael Jordan, Larry right. Bird et al., and coached by Chuck Daly of Bloomsburg University, by the way. And they won the gold medal. But that was about the first time that professional athletes were allowed to compete, and it went against the long-sought-out, going back to Baron de Coubertin, who was the founder of the modern Olympic movement. And we're seeing the same thing here. The tide of history is flowing against the NCAA, is I guess my point.
Yeah, but they see they're blowing it though, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
They're not. don't walk into the courtroom and go, well, you know, amateurism and blah blah blah. Throw that argument out the window.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk money. Talk to them about cash. The fact that you have the Vizio. Okay, the Rose Bowl presented by Vizio, the Discover Orange Bowl, it's all part of the NCAA tournament. It's all part of the grand scheme so that you have 800 student-athletes instead of having 98 of them, 85 football players, 13 men's basketball players. You have 800 of them here as opposed to 98.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? Every ticket sold in that stadium, every ticket sold in the basketball arena, the TV money, everything else goes to everybody else across the landscape as well as to the football players in the program. It's all done tax-free. You walk out without any debt. Guess what? How many students right now are going through what their student loans are going to be? How many of you in the audience out there have had to make a student loan monthly payment this month? Okay, guess what? If you're an athlete and you do it right, you should walk out. They are getting paid. It's just being done in a bloodless scholarship done on a computer mouse. Okay, now now they need to improve certain things. There's no question about that. One of them is the number of hours. And Jim Delaney, to me, made a really good point the other day, and I agree with this. He said he'd padlock the gyms for 2 months. You know, guys, stay away. Don't do anything.
Yes. Like, go find the library. Do things other than the sport that brought you here. Well, get a well-rounded education. It certainly makes sense.
Well, but you're still, look, you're still being paid to do it. It's just going toward your education. It's going toward, that's why you need to change rules. And part of it is, one of the changes has to come from the NBA Players Association. And if I were Emmert, I would go to the NBA Players Association and say, look, we'd like to see the rule look like this. You're 18 years old. You can declare for the NBA draft if you want. Go ahead. But if you declare that you're going to go to college instead, we will give you not a one-year, but a four-year scholarship, as long as you obviously stay in good academic standing and stay out of disciplinary trouble. Okay? Once you get through those two, we are not going to revoke it and take it away. Okay, and you have to, on your part, at the minimum, give us a 2-year commitment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make a 4-year commitment to your 2-year commitment to go to school instead of going to the NBA draft. I mean, and that's why, you know, you've got to talk money with these people. You have to look at her and say, all this money is going to make sure that we have a women's soccer program, a women's volleyball program, a wrestling program. Because if football and men's basketball players get paid, I can tell you right now, okay, for those of you who love certain sports, and one in particular, it's going to be a very painful ride very painful ride because there are 76 wrestling programs in this country. I can tell you that if football and men's basketball players start getting paid, there won't be 76 wrestling programs in this country.
I think you're exactly right.
I can tell you that right now.
I mean, couldn't agree more.
There'll be wrestling programs, and Penn State will have one, but the number from 76 is going to exponentially drop because you can't afford to keep all these sports. You can't. All right? And that's a men's sport, okay, that already, as you mentioned, Title IX did some damage to it in terms of its ability to be kept. Well, it'll be kept by some schools, but a lot of schools are going to look at it and go, hey, look, I got Title IX. I got to pay athletes because guess what? If I have to pay men's basketball players, I got to pay women's basketball players.
Mm-hmm.
And women's basketball loses between $2.5 and $3.5 million at virtually every school in the country. Well, now it's going to lose a lot more with the meal plan and having to pay them. I mean, I'm telling you, you've got to go into the courtroom and you've got to tell her in straightforward terms, here's what we do with the money. I'm not worried about amateur status. They're not amateurs because they're on scholarship, okay? We are paying money for them to go to school. We are paying for them to eat. We are paying for them for a place to stay, okay? So the hell with that, all right? It's, you know, the money goes so that Jane can have a scholarship. The money is going so Bob the wrestler can have a scholarship. The money is going so Sandy can have a scholarship, okay? You're going to now tell Sandy and Jane they can't have scholarships because of the O'Bannon case?
Yeah. And that's,
I mean, that's what I tell her. That's what I tell her.
Steve, this is the classic rule that we all talk about from time. The rule of unintended consequences. By the way, you missed the athlete Sarah and her scholarship. I'm looking at Sarah now.
I had no athletic scholarship.
Sarah's an Olympian.
Yes, she is.
She's an Olympian. That's what you're telling them.
The
model needs modification. One of them was the food thing. They took care of it. Okay. When you have a group of people that are allegedly high on the intellectual food chain, sit in a room and debate whether a bagel is a snack unless you put cream cheese on it and it's a meal. Okay.
Right.
You sit that and you go, are you kidding me? Really? You have your degrees in what?
Exactly. And, you know, Steve, just to bring it closer to home, this whole argument, you know, we're doing it in the context of Penn State and Ohio State and the big schools. But it's going to ripple down to Bucknell and Susquehanna, too.
Of course it is.
Let's not kid ourselves. It will have ramifications right down to Division III of the NCAA.
And Emmer took a shot at we don't want to be the minor leagues. They don't make any money. Well, the minor leagues do make money. Minor league baseball does make money, right? And minor league baseball, believe it or not, works, Mark, to your argument, okay? An 18-year-old often comes out and goes to minor league baseball right away and not to college. Okay, they decide to take that route. That's why I would look at an 18-year-old in basketball and say, go ahead, go pro, right? Because that's why God created the D-League, all right? Okay, go to the D-League. You don't have to go to college. If you go to college, you're going to have to stay for 2 years. And guess what? It's going to be good for you. And when it's over with, 98, I mean, give them stats, 98, 99% don't make it to the pros. But if they're smart, they get a degree. We will have done something with the money.
Yep.
It's an investment. And that's what you got to talk about. You can't sit there and talk about amateurism. And I read his testimony. You can't come off as a highbrow intellectual of theory.
Yep.
You must be realistic and lay out the numbers.
But, Steve, a guy like Emmert at the NCAA with his background in education, it is impossible for him to articulate the things that need to be said because of his entire life. And that is one of, if you're the lawyer for the NCAA in this, and you know that Emmert's going to tell you as the client, you're putting me on the witness stand so I can set him straight, you just shudder when you know, because that's probably the way it went. And he doesn't get it. And we know at Penn State he doesn't get it, but he doesn't get it nationally.
Right. This is not a think tank. This is real life.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not a think tank. Okay? Okay? It's a business in this realm. The business is football stadium is packed. basketball arena, while not being packed, still is televised. Okay? NCAA tournament money. Everybody gets a cut. Penn State did contribute 6 years' worth of shares by going in 2011. Okay?
Yes, they did.
Okay? Football, same thing. Okay? Revenue sharing, blah, 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 blah. Okay? The money is not all going to the football program, the men's basketball program. It's going, okay, it goes to them, but also to fencing, to wrestling, to women's soccer. It goes everywhere so that we have provided now equal opportunity to everybody because of the unfunded mandate that Title IX is that we support.
Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, it's what's really the problem is that the NCAA at a certain level just doesn't get it. They just are not even in the realm of the real world. And they are such, guy like Emmert as the president of the NCAA is such an easy target because you can say, well, you know, the contracts that the NCAA has signed per year are, say, $1 billion for college basketball. And look at the right. salary this guy gets, $1.5 million, plus there's bonuses and this and that and everything
right.
else.
Sure.
And he's just there to protect his own fat salary, which is probably true. But he doesn't get the big picture. And you know, that spells a real difficult thing for the NCAA to, in one way or another, prevail in this case. And if Ed O'Bannon, who is a very sympathetic person, by the way, all the courtroom reports sure. of his testimony, he came across as a genuinely decent yeah. human being who was wronged.
And well, except for one area.
Yeah,
one area where I think he blew it, and that was when he said Little Leaguers should get money because they appear on TV.
Well, that and his on his lack of stellar academic performance at UCLA.
Right. He was at UCLA for 5 years, and he still ended up, what, 7 credits shy of his degree?
Yeah,
no,
something
more than that.
Yeah, it was more than that.
It's more than that.
Yeah, he was
not
on the verge of getting a diploma, that's for sure. He was close, but not that close.
I mean, exactly. He's not on the verge of getting a diploma or whatever. And he actually was there 5 years. He didn't leave early.
No.
I mean, he did. He actually was a senior when he was drafted. I think it was by the Nets. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you can hear my voice, you need to stop what you're doing and get to Sunbury Motors Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, where the deals are sizzling. All new Hyundais are priced to move with the biggest discounts of the year. No gimmicks here. All you need to do to qualify is show up. Check out a 2014 Sonata for only $19,716. And we're not talking about a stripped-down stick shift with cranked windows and no AC. This car has a backup camera, power seat, heated seats, Bluetooth, and more. Looking for a leftover? We have a few 2013s left with discounts up to 10 grand and still with a 10-year 100,000 mile warranty. All with rates as low as 0% and great gas mileage, you can't lose. We're available 24/7 at sunburymotors.com or get to the North 4th Street Auto Plaza where Sunbury Motors Hyundai is selling more cars and satisfying more customers. And it has been that way since 1915.
All right, Bob, some show today. Thanks so much.
You're
that
welcome.
Was incredible.
You're welcome. Tomorrow, Penn State football.